Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain, and yes, I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And once again, yes, that was a piece of shameless self-promotion. That is my book, The Mad Hatter, and if you haven't read it yet, you should. It was one of the favorite pieces that I've ever written. Tonight is Saturday night, and my guest is author Teresa Hisong. And I have to tell you, I cannot wait to get this interview started. It's going to be a fun-filled and exciting hour. Teresa is a mother of two and the wife of a retired Air Force Master Sergeant. After 17 years of traveling around the country and moving from base to base, they finally settled their roots back in Teresa's hometown of Olive Branch, Mississippi, where she enjoys her time with her old friends and family. After almost 3 years of managing a retail bookstore, Teresa has gone behind the scenes to write romantic stories with flair. She daydreams of the perfect love affair and takes those ideas to paper. Good evening, Teresa. How are you?
I am great. How are you tonight? Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And will you do me a favor when we get off tonight's show? Will you please tell your husband thank you for your service?
Oh, I sure will. I'll tell him.
And thank you and your family for your sacrifice for standing with him and loving him and allowing him to keep my country and your country and his country safe. I appreciate that more than
you
will ever know.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. I love my service people. They are the backbone of America. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't believe that, go back and read your history. Because they are the backbone of this country.
Yes, they are.
I am very, very strong patriot.
Good.
So, with that being said, tell me a little bit about a sister Southerner who left Mississippi and traveled all the way around God's Green Acres. With her military husband, was this something you planned to do with your life, or was it something that just set you on the path you are now?
You know, it's really not what I planned to do. In college, I wanted to be an accountant. I wanted to be a boring accountant. My family, when I was 19, my father got a job working in Phoenix, Arizona, and I had the choice to either stay or, you know, explore and go with him. So I decided to go to Phoenix, and I met this guy in the Air Force, you know, and gosh, we were friends for a couple of months, started dating, and then a year and 2 months later, we were married, and actually our 20th wedding anniversary is this coming Wednesday.
Well, congratulations.
So, thank you. And then just I became an Air Force wife, and I learned to deal with deployments and everything military. And I actually say those years were some of the best years of my life. I've met people of all walks of life. I've made friends, you know, from here to Japan to, you know, they're spread out everywhere. So and their family. That's one thing about the military, that when you know, make friends and fellow military wives, they become family.
And those are bonds that you never lose, because you all have that common bond of multiple deployments and sometimes mm-hmm. not knowing where they're going to be or how long they're going to be gone, and having to be mother, mm-hmm. father, or sister, brother, the whole nine works to the children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Yes. You know, they say it takes a village, and there was a we got all the wives when the husbands were deployed. We all pretty much helped each other out. You know, if somebody had a doctor's appointment, you would, you know, bring your kids over here. Or I've got a doctor's appointment. Can you take my kid? You know, and it was just, you know, all those kids would call me Aunt Teresa, and they still do to this day, and they're teenagers, you know. So, which I love it. I love all of them just equally as if they were my own.
Well, when you were traveling around before you managed the bookstore, did you mm-hmm. have any idea that you wanted to write? Did you still want to be a boring accountant?
No, once I became a Air Force wife, I had various jobs with, you know, different places. I was a buyer for a construction supply company. You know, I did things like that. And it wasn't until 2007 that my husband, we moved to Florida. We were stationed in Florida. And my husband was going to be deployed for like 10 months at a time. He'd be home for, you know, 6 months to 10 months and then be gone again. And then it was going to be pretty rough. And I had started working at the bookstore, and I was promoted to a manager. So I managed a bookstore down there in Florida. And on that first deployment, my husband said, or my neighbor said, I said, what am I going to do? You know, he's gone. The kids are in school. You know, it wasn't summertime. It was during school time. She said, you should write a book. And I laughed. We laughed and laughed and laughed for hours about it. She said, you've got such an imagination. Try it. And I, you know, went home. I was like, I'll write a book. Well, once I got home and the kids were in bed and it got quiet, I started thinking. And I was like, you know what? I've got 10 months. 10 months. Why not? Why not do it? So I sat down and I opened up a Word document and I just started writing. I took all of my friends all over, everybody that I knew, and I wrote a paranormal romance, and I made them all little, you know, somebody was a witch, somebody was a vampire, werewolves, whatever. It took me about 3 months and I wrote 70,000 words or so. You know, just when I had time, I'd write a little bit. And then I closed the lid on my laptop and I said, well, you know what, that was fun. That was fun. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do for the next 6 months? So a couple of weeks later, I sat down and I started writing. And I wrote a book called Blood and Roses. And it was a vampire romance. And I finished that. My husband came home and I did not write again. I started, you know, working and carrying on. And then every so often, I'd just kind of play around and write stuff. And I kind of write stuff. And that went on and off for until 2013. My husband retired from the Air Force, and about 4 months before his retirement, I got an idea for a rock star book, and I wrote it, and then I set it aside. Well, he retired May of 2013, and he told me, he said, you know, you've supported me for 17, 18 years. He said, if you want to publish your books, do it. June 26, 2013, I published that first Rockstar book. And I have not looked back since. I have found my calling in life. I truly believe it. I love it, and I enjoy it, and my husband supports me 100%. So that's my story. That's how I started out. It was just something to do to keep me from worrying about him being in Afghanistan or Iraq, because he went to both places. So that's how it started.
Not very nice places to be either.
Even more. I would not watch the news. I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know which base was being bombed. I didn't want to know how many casualties there were that day, because you don't know. You know, so I refused to watch that part of the news. I would watch the weather, maybe some local stuff, and then I would turn it off. I couldn't watch it, because I didn't want to know.
Well, the thing is, the news media likes to sensationalize everything, not mm-hmm. saying that mm-hmm. our men and women are not in harm's way. They are. Mm-hmm. But they get off on sensationalizing mm-hmm. what goes on.
Yes.
And that's not really fair to the families that are here at home, like you,
mm-hmm.
that, number one, when you hear something like that, of course, your stomach hits the floor because
yes.
you don't know if it's your husband or if it's one of your girlfriend's husbands or one of the neighbor's wives because, yes,
mm-hmm.
gentlemen and ladies, women are in combat. Trust me, they are.
Yes. Yes.
But the media keeps pounding it, and then they keep regurgitating and regurgitating
mm-hmm.
and regurgitating to the point that you want to put your hand through the television and just throttle them.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, gosh, what, 10, 15 years ago, there was a saying that you couldn't believe but 30% of what you hear on the news. And I
right.
truly believe that has changed. 10%. We do not watch the news in our household. We have not watched mainstream media in about 3 years. The only thing I do is if I hear of something, I will go look it up and say, okay, well, that happened. It does not affect me right now. So, you know, and I'm a lot happier. I'm not stressed over what's going on that doesn't affect me.
And that you,
know,
you can't do anything about anyway.
And I can't do anything about it. Exactly.
And what bothers me, what really, and I don't know if you wrote my post, I was on a tear this morning, that the lamestream, I call them lamestream media, they are complaining because of quote-unquote fake news. Well, every time one of them says fake news, I scream at the television, y'all are the biggest fakes of them all. There is no investigative
yeah.
journalism anymore. All they
mm-hmm.
do is sit and regurgitate what someone else says, and it's like, you know, the game the kids used to play. You whisper in somebody's ear, and they whisper in somebody's. By the time it gets back around, it's not anything that you, like you said,
mm-hmm.
to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
When they do that, they are as complicit as the quote-unquote fake news people because they make up stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree, and it's frustrating too because you see the same, you know, an ice cream truck crashed. Well, you see five different news medias going over it, and it's five different stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead
and
of just saying they want to glorify it, you know.
And none of them is what really happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so frustrating.
So, I was on a tear this morning about the news media and especially one in particular. He says, everything that I say, I am truthful. And I'm thinking to myself, no, you're not, because I hear you regurgitating biased information. Nobody in the media does investigative reporting anymore.
Mm-mm. No. No, you don't see it. It's all just whatever can get the biggest shock value for people to turn on the channel. And
right.
it's ratings.
It's ratings. It is all
mm-hmm.
ratings. So
yeah.
when they start talking about what's going on, my mother calls it the snake pit.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah. That's
and,
a good...
and they are saying, and this happened, and that happened, and this happened. I'm saying, why are you people doing this? Why? And I can't wait to be the first one to release names.
Mhm. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which to me is an insult to those families who made that sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
They should leave it up to the families. If the families want to release it, that should be them, not the media.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they need to mourn in peace. They don't need that broadcasted all over, you know.
Exactly.
All over the news. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I say that because my granddaughter now belongs to the US Army and I'm afraid that if, God forbid, something were to happen and they started blasting her name, I'd be on their telephones reading them a
uh-huh.
riot act.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Under no, because it's not right. It's wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they don't
yeah, I mean,
know
you're right.
It,
yeah, they don't. And it all goes back to ratings and money.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
that's...
now that we've solved that problem.
Yes, now we solve world peace.
How have your travels helped your passions? Because I know that you have passions that you're very passionate about, and one in particular we both share the commonality of. How have your travels helped you to make those passions more visual?
With, you know, like we have been stationed everywhere from South Carolina to Las Vegas, Phoenix, the Florida, you know, I have seen so many different cultures, so many different walks of life, so many different people that have come across in all those years of traveling that, you know, and with age too, growing up in the Air Force and, you know, being a wife and raising kids and, you know, just I found that nobody is the same. Everybody is different. Everybody works differently. And I guess I'm just so, I pay attention a lot. And I've become passionate about all kinds of things, you know, love, life, people. I tell people all the time, you know, you only get one shot at this life. Don't be on your deathbed and have regrets. Get out and do things. Don't wait until it's too late.
I knew I fell in love with you for that very reason, because that's the thing that I say at the end of every show.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's just something that I'm so passionate about, is that when somebody says, oh, well, you know, I really want to go on a trip to whatever place, and I've got vacation time, but I think maybe I'll stay home and clean the house. Or I think I'll, you know... Yeah, exactly. Go do it, because if you don't do it now, you may not be able to do it later. We have traveled. I mean, I haven't traveled, like, all over the globe or anything, but if we have time or whatever, we flew from Florida. When he came home in his third deployment, I told my husband, I said, you know what? I want to go to the Pacific Northwest. I want to go to Forts, Washington, where Twilight was, you know, based out of. So I booked us a trip, and my husband and I flew to Seattle, and we drove 3 hours out to outside of Port Angeles, Washington, and we stayed in a cabin with no phone, no internet, no TV. We had a little box radio where we could get a radio station out of Canada. We stayed there for 5 days. We hiked all over the Olympic Peninsula, and when I got to the Seattle airport to return back to Florida, I sat there and cried because I didn't want to leave. It was the most beautiful experience of my life, and it's something that I can take with me when I die. I can take my memories with me when I die. I cannot take my, you know, a coach purse, or I can't take my Toyota Camry that I drive. I can't take that with me, but I can take the memories when it's time for me to go. I can look back and remember the things that I did, and I can smile because, you know what, I've seen the beauties of the world. I've seen it, you know, and that's just the way that I look at things, you know. There's so
and
much
you're right.
going
life,
on.
Life is too short.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And the thing that people don't understand is they say, well, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, or maybe next month, or maybe next year. Well, we are not promised anything besides this moment in time.
Exactly. You know, tomorrow, tonight could be our last night, or... you know, you may not have a week, you might have a day, you might have another 60 years. You don't know. You know, and that's what the craziness of life is, you know. I'm 42, and I feel that there's so much more that I need to do, you know, and I hope to do it, you know. I do. I still want to go. I want to see a real castle. You know, I want to go to England or wherever. I want to see a real castle. I want to see one, you know, and that's something I haven't done. That's something that's on the, you know, everybody has a bucket list, and that's something that I want to do, you know.
And you will do it.
And I'll do it. I will do it. I will plan it out, and I will do it.
this is something else that I usually do at the end of the show, but that's okay. We'll do it in the middle of the show. Is talk about dreamers. We're all dreamers. We all have goals. We all have dreams. And what you just said is something else that I say at the end of the show. If you have a dream, take the steps to make that dream happen.
And you know what? The thing is it's not too late to try something. And that's something with my writing. You know, when I first kind of started playing around with it, and then, you know, I kind of laughed, oh, yeah, I will never publish a book, you know. And I thought, I'm too old to publish a book. Well, at the time I was 36. And you know what I did? I mentally kicked myself. And I said, you know what? Your goal is you're going to publish a book before you are 40 years old. That's what I told myself. That was my little thing. And do you know, I published that book when I was 38 and almost 38 and 6 months, 38 and a half, a little bit over that. I did it before I was 40. That was my goal, and I did it. Yeah, you know, and I'm glad that I did it now.
I published my first book in my late 50s. I'm 65 now.
It's not too late to start something new.
No, I graduated I went back to school in my 50s, graduated with a 3.50 and became a bounty hunter. That was a dream I'd had since I was a little girl, and I was in my 50s.
Wow. That's an exciting job, though. I mean, talking about...
it's interesting.
You know, it's very interesting. That's an interesting job, but it's you're not sitting behind a desk for sure, you know?
No. But the thing is, the two things that I wanted to do was be a bounty hunter and publish, and I did it in my 50s.
Yep.
So you were right. It's only too late when you're on your deathbed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Don't have regrets. I mean, and the thing is you don't have to fly overseas to go see a castle. You know, I mean, you can take a journey in your own state. You can find state parks and be like, you know what? I want to go on a hike for an entire day, just unplugged, no phones, no nothing, and I just want to walk through wilderness. You can do that. I mean, even something that simple. You know, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to go on a trip somewhere. I mean, there's so many things around that you can do on your own, you know, that's not going to cost a lot of money.
And
but
your
it's
local
a new
community.
Experience. Yes.
And all people have to do is look around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where I live here in Port St. Lucie, there's all kinds of hiking trails. We're 10 minutes from the ocean.
Yeah.
We're 5 minutes from the intercoastal. And
you're about to make me put another place on my bucket list.
you would love it because Fort Pierce is right up the road. We've got the Navy SEAL Museum, which your husband would love.
Oh yeah.
We've got the Elliott Museum down in Stuart, but it's we've got the Oxbow Center, which is nothing but hiking trails.
Oh, and that'd be great.
It's a preserve. We've got the Savannahs, which is a preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't appreciate it. People that live here don't appreciate it.
Yep. You know what? The thing is we're, you know how your parents used to say, times haven't changed that much. Well, they have changed a lot since I was a kid. We are trying to push ourselves to do too much, too fast, and you know, doing twice the amount of stuff in a single amount of time. And people are not stepping back like they used to. Mm-hmm. You know, family vacations are few and far between. You know, I mean, years and years and years ago, you took a family vacation every year. Now, you know, yes, some people still do, but not a lot of people are doing that. They don't have time because they're so demanding.
Either that or the parents go off and leave the children, and the children go off with somebody else and don't go with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have time to, because they're too busy being entertained.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
And when I was growing up, we sat on the front porch a lot at my grandmother's house.
Yes.
But that was the gathering place. That's where you learn things from the adults.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Or sit around the dining room table and you know, all your cousins and your aunts and uncles come over for Sunday dinner, and then, I mean, they're there from, what, 10 a.m. till almost 8 o'clock at night when everybody says, okay, we got to go home and, you know, get ready for bed because we have work tomorrow. But we'd spend the whole day on Sunday just visiting and just talking about life and, yeah, telling silly stories or letting your grandfather tell you about the time that, you know, he did this or did that. And it's something that I would love to see us get back to, but it would be very, I don't think that's going to happen.
We're too plugged into the electronics. We're too plugged into television.
Yeah.
Too plugged into iPads and how many times have you gone to a restaurant, Teresa, and you sat down with your family and
mm-hmm.
you look around and people aren't talking? They're looking at their phones.
Mhm. Yes, and that is one rule in our home that I cook every night. Maybe once a week I'll tell them, fend for yourself, there's leftovers. But I am a traditional Southern woman, I guess. But I cook a meal every night and have it on the table. And my kids are, I got one that's getting ready to be 15 and one that's getting ready to be 17. They know that as soon as they walk in that kitchen, their phones are still in their room. We do not have technology at the table. If a phone goes off, it is ignored. Yeah. It's time for conversation. And we go through our children's day, and my husband asked them, what did you do in math class? My kids are in high school, and he goes through each of their classes. You know, what did you do in math? What did you do in science? What did you, you know, and we talk about it. And if something's, you know, if somebody has a football game or something and our evening is interrupted or whatever, my kids at 15 and 17 say, is Daddy going to ask us about our day? You know, are y'all going to ask us? They have so used to it that it messes them up on their routine if they don't get asked about their day.
Well, they feel like there's something missing from their
mm-hmm.
from their day. There's a void there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from Georgia, so I know exactly what you're saying.
Oh, you do. Yeah.
Yeah, my mother cooked every night, and dinner
uh-huh.
was put on the table. And we didn't call dinner, it's called supper. Supper was put on the table.
Well,
and when you sat down, things were discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you wanted to leave the table, you asked to be excused. You just didn't get up
mm-hmm.
and leave. You better have a real good reason why you're asking to be excused.
Exactly. Yeah. And we sit around and eat, and then once we're all done eating and we're done talking, then we get up. And some days we may be done eating and we're still sitting there talking.
Uh-huh.
You know. But that's just my one rule. I realize that they are, you know, they're doing sports or whatever, and I tell them, look, breakfast and dinner, especially during the summer, I'm like, you're on your own, but at dinner time, that's mama's time. Mama wants that. I want a family unit, and a lot of it's routines, and a lot of that is military. That is the way that we lived for so long. My kids didn't know anything other than military life up until 3-4 years ago, and it's just routines. It's routines that we got into, and it was stuck with it.
But
think about this.
How many, and I hear the excuse, well, both parents work. That's not an excuse because sometimes I work three
mm-hmm.
jobs, but I
yeah.
cooked for my children when they were
mm-hmm.
little. My children got, for one thing, couldn't afford to eat out. So I would get
mm-hmm.
home from work and bring them in from school, and I'd have them supper fixed. It might not be a 10-course meal, but they had supper, and we sat down and we ate.
Oh, yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
how many children, their mother comes running through the door with fast food or something through
mm-hmm.
the drive-through or the pickup line, and you lose, you know, let's throw it on the table, we'll gobble up our food real quick, goodbye, see you later.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They don't know their children.
No, they don't. Yeah, and that's a routine that people have gotten into. It's easier to do fast food. It's easier to just throw the food at them and everybody's happy. And then, you know, it's a snowball effect because it started out with the economy is bad. The cost
mm-hmm.
of living has increased. Both parents have to work. Some parents have to work, you know, they're both working a job and one of the other parents might have to take a second job just to be able to afford the mortgage, car note, to be able to get back and forth, you know, just everything. And that's I think that's part of it. I think that, you know, we're not in good times right now. And I think a lot of it is companies are working their employees. They want them, you know, to work longer for less money. And it's stressful. It's stressful on families and stuff. And you have to find, you know, it doesn't have to be every night. It could be, you know, Saturday night or Sunday night dinners, you know. But as long as you connect with your family and have that safe zone where everybody comes together, I think I think that's a good thing. And, I mean, that's what we've done. And it seems to be working for us. So.
Well, and children can feel safe to discuss anything with their parents. It, say little Joe got a bad grade at school, it's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
That's right.
How did it happen? How can we fix it? Not you're better than this, you can do better. But how can we fix it together as a family? How can we support you to help you want to do better?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's what we need to do. Sometimes you just got to step back from all the hustle and bustle life and remember how to live.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. How to sit on the front porch and rock in that rocking chair.
Oh, man, I tell you what, if it wasn't so cold here in northern Mississippi, I mean, it's been cold the past couple of days, I'd love to sit on the porch. I'd love to sit on the porch and rock and just watch the, you know, watch the cars go by.
Yep. Those are some of the best memories of my life. It's like everything just slowed down. My grandmother and I would sit on the front porch and watch the gas station across the street because that's where my grandfather and my uncle worked. And she and I would go out and sit on the porch, and we'd sit there and we'd rock in the rocking chair. Sometimes she'd send me up to a little corner store and get a 3-cent knee-high grape or a knee-high orange, and I'd walk back down. Of course, 3 cents was hard to come by. That was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah.
We'd sit and we'd watch that station, and as soon as the big sign outside went out, we knew it wouldn't be long before my grandfather would be walking across the street and coming to the house.
Yeah.
Our children.
And those were just the times, yeah.
Yep. They don't know what they're missing. Well, now that we've discussed children and how we can make them better children.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about your books a little bit. We talked about dreamers and how to make a dream come true, and your books are your dreams. Now, there's a book or two that is now out of print. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did take my Glory Days books were the first books that I wrote. I ended up taking them out of print. They are free on my website. That to me, they were my test into the waters. I have pulled them down. I may republish them at some point, but right now I have it. That was the first rock star romance books that I wrote, and I enjoyed writing them. I have since moved on to another rock star romance series and a paranormal series, and I'm having so much fun writing them that I'm going to stick with those for a little while before I get into anything else.
What is your paranormal series?
My paranormal series is The Rise of the Pride. It's about Black Panthers, werepanthers. They're shifters. And I have been wanting to write a book about shifters for years. And I just never had, I mean, I had little ideas and everything, but nothing really came together until the beginning of 2016, and it finally, I was sitting in, I had closed the laptop for the night and just kind of winding down, and all of a sudden a story hit me about an alpha that ended up finding his mate in the owner of a little bar in a little town in northern Mississippi, which is actually the town that I live in Olive Branch. And I just kind of brainstormed it, and it snowballed from there, and I'm getting ready to put out the third book in that series. The first one went out in February of 2016, and then I'm getting ready to put out the third one.
Rise of the Pride.
Uh-huh, that was Talon, Rise of the Pride. Mm-hmm.
All right. And what is the second one?
The second one is winter.
And then the third one is getting ready to come out.
That will be Savage, and it will be out on Tuesday, the 13th.
Sweet. So we are launching your new book on tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't read Hurrahs of the Pride series, the third one is coming out in 3 days. You heard it first here on Off the Chain.
I cannot wait. I had so much fun writing this one. The fans seem to be just, you know, when's it coming out, which excites me because it makes me want to write more of them. And I've slated 10 books for that series.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I introduced a few new characters in Savage's book that's about to come out. So that 10-book series might be extended a little bit.
So you heard it first here, ladies and gentlemen. Again, if Teresa, his song, go look her up, because if you are into paranormal and you're into shifters, go look it up. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. So what is the second series that you work on?
Okay, the other series is Fatal Cross Live. Fatal Cross Live follows 4 rock band members. They are all the band called Fatal Cross. The first book is Fatal Desires, and it starts out 3 years after the entire band comes out of rehab. They're all ex-drug addicts. But I do not write anything regarding that other than the fact that they have come out ahead, that this is them, their new start, their new, you know, their new beginning.
Right.
And the Fatal Desires follows the first one, is the first book, and then Fatal Temptations is the second. And then Fatal Seduction will be the next book that will be out sometime in the late spring of 2017.
You heard it first here, ladies and gentlemen. Again, late spring, early 17. That segues into my next question. Before the show started, you told me you've been really, really busy with a film and production crew at your house because they were filming a music video, correct?
Yes, ma'am. We have loaned our house to a band that is a dear friend of ours to do some video footage. They needed the interior of a home, and I offered for them to come out here. And so they have been shooting some footage here and there to blend in with some other stuff that they had. And that's been fun. That's been fun to watch how that all plays out. I love my music, and I'll do anything to help my local bands and anything that I can in the area.
Well, that brings me up to the question that goes back to your books. When you decided to write that second series that had to do with the band, did that come from your love of music and sometimes seeing how our quote-unquote idols in the music industry fall so far? And some of them come back, some of them don't.
Yes, that's true. I have always been into music. I love music. I've loved rock music since I was, I think, in seventh grade when I learned about Motley Crue, and you know, I always loved rock music. And I started researching back when, like the Glory Days books, when I first started writing them. Started going to concerts, and I people watch, and I watch this or watch that. And this has kind of snowballed into I have made friends in the music industry. I have a lot of friends that play music. So I can get with them and say, you know what, tell me about what it's like on the road. You know, tell me what you're thinking about. Are you thinking about home? Are you thinking about the next gig? You know, things like that. So they help me out a lot whenever I have questions when I'm in my writing and I need to research. I can just pick up the phone and place a call and have my, my burning questions answered.
because, and this, and for ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are thinking about writing, what Teresa is saying is very important, because readers are extremely educated now. And if we as writers don't do our research, no matter the storyline or the genre we're writing in, if we don't, if we're not well versed in that genre or in that time period or even in that artistic ability, as in music, if it's not well researched, Teresa, tell me if I'm right, we come off looking like idiots.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you have to know. You do have to know the terms, and especially, you know, depending on what you're writing, you have to know it like you've lived it, pretty much. I mean, you can't just guess at stuff or whatever. You have to do some major research when you are writing.
Well, what happens if you don't? Let's say, for instance, your musician friends read your book.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, this isn't even believable. How can she?
Exactly.
She doesn't know what she's talking about. That this is garbage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would know. And then you would, you know, nobody buy your books, and reviews would go down. And, you know, you have to know what you're talking about. Because when a reader gets into reading a book, they become the story. And as long as you're writing what you know about, you can, you know, take them to that spot, what they're wanting to get away while they're reading.
And also, have you found that when you're writing, let's say, your little town, you've placed your characters and your story in your town, if you start talking about streets and landmarks and businesses and you get it wrong, people that read that story that are from your town, don't you get the don't you think you'd be getting the phone calls and the emails and the doing?
Yes. Yes. And I did have I have some local fans here, and of course my friends, and they're like, I know exactly, because, you know, I tell them about where the thing is, because I do, the bar that I've put into the Rise of the Pride series is an actual building, which used to be an old, you're from the South, you're from Georgia, you know, people would open up a restaurant out in the country, you know, and this used to be an old country restaurant. Well, that went out of business. Somebody bought it and turned it back into a home, and it looks like a log cabin. Well, that's what I'm using for my bar, but I never tell exactly where it is. I don't say it's at the corner of, you know, these two streets, but everybody that is local, everybody, all my friends have read it, said, I know exactly where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have detailed it that much. They know exactly where it is, within, you know, in real life.
And it put, like you say, it puts them in the story, because they can, in their mind, travel down that street and at that crossroads, walk into that building, and they're in that bar.
Yes. Yes.
And it becomes real.
Yes. And that's what I try to get at. And then when I write my rock star books, I want them to be like like they're standing in the crowd and watching the performance. You know, and that they're feeling everything that I'm trying to tell them that's going on. So.
And when one is standing in a concert, there is more than one thing going on at a time. You've got you have the performers on stage. You have the crowd, but you also have the gaffers and the lighting people and the boom people and all the people that are involved in the background that are like little bees running around, but the crowd doesn't see it. The performers might see it. And so you as the writer have to pick up all of the emotions in the crowd, on the stage, and in the background to make your book work.
Yeah, you have to describe even the the color of the lights that swing across their eyes when they're on stage, you know, or the heat from the lights that are shining down on their back or in their face, you know, you want them to be able to feel what the band member is feeling on the stage, you know, or seeing what they see out in the crowd. Yeah.
Because it gets extremely hot up on people that have never performed don't understand how hot it does get.
It does. It gets very hot. I have been side stage for a few concerts, and it does. It gets very hot.
But yet those performers have to act like they're not in the least bit bothered.
Mm-mm. No, not at all.
And do you agree, Teresa, you've been to enough concerts. Do you agree that there's a difference between a performer and an entertainer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You okay?
Yeah. I just got choked up for a second.
Don't be getting choked up on my show. I can't reach through and do the Heimlich maneuver.
No, give me. Oh, no, yeah, exactly.
You okay now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. If someone were to ask you, I want to write a book and I want to write about this performer who entertains, how would you explain to them the difference between a performer and an entertainer?
Mm. An entertainer is someone who uses, let's say, props or makeups to act to me. A performer is someone who uses their music abilities to, I guess, give to the world what they've created, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah, because you have different...
One of the people that comes to mind is Liberace. I don't know if you remember Liberace.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He was not only a performer, he was an entertainer.
Yeah, he was both. He knew that he had that niche where he could do it both, and he did it well, and it worked for him.
Another one,
you know,
Jerry
Elvis
Lee
was
Lewis.
The same way. Oh, and Jerry Lee Lewis. Jerry Lee Lewis lives actually a town over from me. He's a local guy, just south of Memphis area where I live. Gosh, I love watching that man play. He was back in the day. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was pretty wild. But he did it with such flair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made him stand out above everybody else. Because he was different and because he was wild, especially in a time where you were supposed to be prim and proper. You know, but everything he did, you could tell he did it through his heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have seen some performers, some musical artists, who they didn't bring the soul of their craft to the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that happens.
It happens.
If you ever notice when you find. You find bands that they're a lot different from when they started out to when they are in their prime.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't mind us. She's trying to choke to death.
Don't mind us.
I'm going to have to reach through the phone and do the Heimlich in this
room. No, just my allergies. Of course, my allergies would act up right when, you know, we're doing this interview.
Well, honey, I feel for you. My eyes are just itching like mad. I'm clawing them to
crazy.
Death. So.
Yeah,
I feel your pain. I do.
It's every season change. Every season change, it gets me, and it's just, you know, I'll take a Benadryl here in a little bit and be okay.
Oh, Well, does it do you like it does me? Knocks me right out. I can't take a Benadryl during the day.
I can't either.
Take one at night and then go right to sleep.
Yeah, and so, it's the best sleep ever.
Yes. Don't dream. Don't wake up.
No.
So when you did for somebody that wants to do, because we've got a few minutes and then we'll be running out of time. But real quick, if someone wants to do a shifter, what would they research? Would they research old Indian lore? Would they research other types of lore?
Yeah, and it depends on how you want to write your book. There are several books out there that use all different, even Greek mythology. But especially with lore or any type of, Native American or Greek, any type of lore, you have to know it inside and out. Then there is where, like with mine, I made my own rules. And of course, everybody has a rule, you shift, but each book is different. Either it's a quick one or it takes them a while to shift as long as you can, when you're writing it, basically, as long as there's no question as to how did that happen, if you follow all of your rules that you make out, if you can, you got to make it all blend. You got to make it all workable and not something where you're like, there's no way they could do that. You have to make it believable. You have to have truth in your fiction, period.
There you go. That's the word I was looking for. There has to be a modicum of truth in your fiction. Where can, I know the audience is going to flock to you, so where can you be found, my friend?
You can find me on Amazon, iBooks, Nook, Smashwords, Scribd, Amazon Kindle, or you can reach me at my website. I have links to buy all my paperbacks where I will autograph them and send them out personally, which is just authorteresahitsong.com. And I ship them myself, I sign them, and if you want it signed to you or to your mom or a friend, you just let me know and I'll do it for you.
And real quick, they can also find you on Facebook, right?
Oh, yeah, and Facebook, all the social media sites. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I got a Snapchat because my kids made it. So I'm on Snapchat, too, and Instagram. I'm on there as well. I post silly pictures, and my Instagram is half book stuff and then half just me. I'll post pictures of me and my kids being silly or me fishing or me, if I find something, I'll be like, oh, that's pretty. I'll take a picture of it, and I'll post it on Instagram. So, yeah. But I am all over social media, for sure.
I understand that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to recap right quick before we run out of time, because normally I ask my guests what dreamers need to know, and we did this in the middle of the show, but Teresa and I are going to recap right quick. If you have a dream, what, Teresa? What does a person need to do with that dream?
They need to go for it. They need to reach out for it, grab it, and do it. Your time is limited. Get out and do it now, and don't wait for tomorrow.
And don't say, I'm too old, I'm too busy.
Exactly.
We're all busy, so that dog don't hunt. If you want it bad enough, you go and you get it, because if you don't get it, at the end of your days, you're going to say, I live with regret. And
yes.
Teresa and I don't want to live with regret, right, Teresa?
No, we don't. No, we don't. I want to, when it's my time to go, I want to smile. I want to smile when I go into my eternity. I want to know that I did everything that I could.
I want them to drag me out kicking and screaming because I'm not through yet.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're going to have to, I'm putting the stoppers on and I'm holding on to the door frame when they come to get me, but but at least I'll be smiling.
That's right. Cause we know we did 99% of our bucket list. And ladies and gentlemen, Teresa's in her 40s. She's published since 2013. I'm 65. I started bounty hunting at 54. I went back to college at 52. I published my first book in my late 50s. That was in 2007. I published my first book in 2007. I've been trying to get that book published since the 1970s.
Wow.
It's a long time.
It is.
But
sure
what
is.
Teresa,
that's a long time.
Yes. And I got so many rejection letters, I can wallpaper my house and your house.
Oh, gosh.
That didn't
I love
that. But that didn't stop me. I had to take a few detours, but it didn't stop me. So what we're saying, ladies and gentlemen, is time is short. Our life is over in the blink of an eye. You say, well, I have little ones. Well, tomorrow they'll be in college, and the next day you'll be a grandparent. Trust us on this. Trust us. I'm sure Teresa's last 17 years have flown by.
They have. And you know what? And with my kids, from the time they were born until the time they were 12, those 12 years, I barely remember them because they flew by.
So if you've got a dream, I don't care if it's dog catcher or garbage collector or the CEO of Netflix. Whatever that dream is, Teresa and I want you all to take that dream and run with it like you stole it.
Yes. Do it.
Because you don't want to live with regrets. This radio show, Teresa, is a 5-year dream.
Wow.
It's something
That's
that
amazing.
I planned for. Yeah, I planned for it. And now this interview tonight has been between you and I and 6,000 of our closest friends. That's how big this thing has grown in 3.5
That's
months.
That's amazing. That is
all over
amazing.
The world.
That's
so
amazing.
When this
congratulations.
Show ends tonight, thank you. Well, it's all for y'all. When this show ends tonight, the show will go into archives, and then I'll put it on podcast, and I'll put it on my page and link you in it. I want you to take those podcasts and use them for whatever you want to.
Oh, thank you.
Ladies, and thank you for taking an hour out of your life to spend it with me tonight. I am so humbled and appreciative. You don't know. And I'm bringing you back. Because when your new book comes out next spring, you're coming back so we can launch the book.
Sweet. Let's do it. I'm ready.
Yeah, it's a done deal. Ladies and gentlemen, Teresa's coming back because I don't just bring my guest in one time and then forget about them. I like for them to keep coming back so they can keep being heard. That's also my gift to y'all. Wednesday night, December the 15th. I will be bringing back Arthur Robbie Cox, so if you missed him the first time, you get to hear him again. The man is an absolute hoot. December the 16th, author Miranda Shakler. December the 14th, which is next Wednesday, author Barbara Watkins, and she's got something to tell us. December the 21st, ladies and gentlemen, and Teresa, be sure and tune in. December the 21st. Best-selling, award-winning author David Morrell. Now, this is a big coup.
Oh.
If you know the name Rambo First Blood, then you will know David Morrell. He wrote those books. Plus, he's written some new books that we're going to be talking about. Been trying to get him on the show forever. Finally nailed him. December the 22nd will be my round 4 with radio host Floyd Potts. Y'all all know about Floyd and how we go and debate issues and go round the circle and keep coming back to the beginning. And we are teaching people how to debate and have discourse and still remain friends without the name-calling and without the defense. So, ladies and gentlemen, Teresa, thank you again, my friend. You're coming back next year. Ladies and gentlemen, be kind to each other, love each other, and live your dream. Because tomorrow...
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, my friend. Keep living your dream, Teresa. Keep living it with everything you've got, because I'm going to help you live it.
Thank you.
Well, you're my sister from the South.
That's right. That's right. And we got to stick together, don't we?
Absolutely.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen... Go ahead, honey.
I would say thank you for having me, and thank you to everybody listening. I just wanted to make sure I said that.
You're quite welcome. And so Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, Off the Chain with me, your host, Yvonne Mason. be kind and love one another. Until then, we say good night. Teresa, hang on just a second, sweetheart.
Okay.
Now we are off the air, but in anything we say, we'll show up in archives. That's the beauty of the archives, because if people go in and listen to them, they hear whatever
the
we're talking
thing.
About. Yeah,
oh,
but I wanted to... But I wanted to take a few minutes and say I am very, very honored, and I'm very, very humbled and very appreciative and grateful that you...
Well, thank you. I thank you so much for having me, for having me today. This was interesting. I've never done a phone interview like this before. So,
And we didn't just talk about your craft. We talked about you, the person, which is important, I feel, for readers and fans to get to know Teresa, who Teresa is, what Teresa's passions are, how she feels about
them. And, you know, I have made some amazing friends since starting this that I probably would have never met in my lifetime. And I tell my friends, too, and I tell my fans this, that when I started this career, I told myself to stay true to myself. So what you see is what you get with me. I refuse to sugarcoat anything. You know, if I'm out at the book signings and the conventions and things, if you see me and it's not time for book signing time and I'm out around in the hotel coming down to get coffee, you're going to see me in sweatpants and with my hair pulled up and maybe no makeup. And that's the way you're going to get me. Because
can either accept you or not. That's the way I feel. What you see is what you get.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just the way I've been.
Yeah. And people really appreciate that. They appreciate us being real, because so many times they're not. People are not real. And that's why when I do an interview like this, it's just a friendly interview. It's getting to know you and who you are and what you're about. So I appreciate you opening up.
Oh, no problem. That was fun. I do. I love talking about life. It's something that, you know, all my little, my kids talk about my philosophies of life, you know, and I'm just glad that I realized these things now instead of being old, or maybe if I'm sick or something, thinking, you know what, I should have done this or I should have done that. And I don't want that. I just want to, I want to do what I can while I can do it.
And have fun at it.
Hell yes. And have fun. That's the number one goal. Yeah.
So what we're going to do, I'm going to end this conversation and then this thing will start going up into archives. When it gets through archiving, I'm going to put the link on Facebook and I'm going to tag you in it. Then I'm going to download the show and start putting it up probably tomorrow on all the podcasts. It's also going to be on iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube and TuneIn Radio, FM.com, MixCloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Podcast, and Podomatic and Hipcast.
Wow. Okay.
And so it's going to get exposure all over the world, honey.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it very, very much.
So I will
tag
you.
And I will definitely be back.
And do me a favor. If any of your musician friends want to come on the show, I'm always looking for guests. And I will take and make a two-hour show. And what I do with my musicians is I do a two-hour show. And I interview them. And then I play some of their music. And we discuss that piece of music.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And how it came about and all that.
Yeah.
So tell them if they want exposure, it's free. I mean, it's I'm paying it forward. People have been good to me, so I have to be good to others because I'm only as successful as y'all are.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm a firm believer in paying it forward. So I thank you for that, because not a lot of people do that. There's so much greed in this world right now that, you know, that people want something for themselves, and they don't want to reach out and help their fellow man or woman.
But then that makes us selfish and self-centered and unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So we will keep growing, and I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to give me an idea of when you think your book is going to be out, and then we'll set up a show
okay.
right before it comes out so that we can say it's going to launch on this day, and
okay.
if you can pre-order it and all that,
okay.
and we'll get you back on. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about mm-hmm. philosophies of life.
Yes, we can do that again, too. I tell you what
we'll
I'll do is when I get to the halfway point in a book, once I kind of get to that halfway point and I get into the routine and everything, that's when I start planning on release dates and whatnot. And then when I nail down something firm, I'll contact you and let you know. But
okay.
I'm thinking April time frame. I'm
okay.
thinking
that's
April.
Perfect.
Okay.
And,
it'd be nice
and
warm.
If you want to, feel free to post
mm-hmm.
anything on my page that you want to.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
That page is for it. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the world. I just maintain that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, my dear, thank
well,
you again, and I will get off
well,
of here and
you.
Get this in archives and send it to you, and then we'll get the rest of it up.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, darling. Talk to you later.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.